Welcome to Season 4 of E-Commerce Fastlane. This podcast helps resilient entrepreneurs thrive with Shopify. And now, on to episode 132.
You're listening to E-Commerce Fastlane, the podcast show to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company. Powered by Shopify. Listen to real conversations with partners and subject matter experts as they share proven practical strategies, platforms, and the best Shopify apps to help you accelerate your business. The time is now for you to improve efficiencies, grow revenue, profit, and lifetime customer loyalty. Please welcome your host, startup founder, and strategic advisor, Steve Hutt.
This episode is brought to you by LimeSpot, the leading AI product recommendation software solution for high-growth brands. Their all-in-one platform helps you acquire and convert customers by creating targeted experiences on and off-site. Brands that use LimeSpot see an average increase in revenue of 20 to 28%. Very compelling. They're able to showcase highly relevant products and deliver higher conversions than competitors by leveraging the largest independent AI data set of over 100 billion signals, combining product data, consumer behavior, and trend analysis. The result is deeper engagement, higher average order value, increased revenue, and strong return on ad spend. LimeSpot uses that data to create a customized on-site experience for each shopper throughout their journey, from landing or homepage, through product pages, cart experience, and post-purchase, using recommendations targeted to each customer based on product information, shopper information, and intent. In addition, the platform allows you to layer on targeted experiences based on sophisticated segmentation, giving you the power to personalize emails, collections, upsells, and more based on purchase history, behavior on the website, and customer insight. And that's not all. LimeSpot's newest offering is a very unique Google Shopping solution, the first of its kind in the market. The solution uses AI to enrich the attributes shared with Google, pre-validates and automates your feed, and passes through product and audience targeting information from your website. The result is higher discoverability and an average improvement in return on ad spend of 10 to 26x. Absolutely amazing. From Google Shopping to personalized product recommendations and emails and on-site, LimeSpot ensures every customer has a unique and customized experience. Smart brands truly understand that creating a personalized experience is critical to driving both sales and lifetime value. Get started with LimeSpot today and turn shoppers into buyers. You can check them out at LimeSpot.com. Hey there, it's Steve, and welcome back to the E-Commerce Fastlane podcast. Now, if this is your first time listening, this is an e-commerce show where we have honest and transparent conversations about building and thriving with your store powered by Shopify or Shopify Plus. New episodes are available each week with your favorite podcast player through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Or you can also sign up online at ecommercefastlane.com and be notified when a new show is being released. Now today, I'd like to welcome Corinne, who is the Vice President of the U.S. Eastern Region at Smartly.io, the leading, and I'm going to quote her on this because it's so interesting, the power of this platform. I'm learning so much today, but they are the leading social media advertising automation platform available anywhere. Now, literally since 2013, Smartly.io has been one of the largest Facebook marketing providers, and they are helping advertisers in all verticals. So retail, e-commerce, so Shopify is part of that, gaming, travel, a lot more. What they do is they really help to streamline and optimize social advertising. And currently, Smartly is seeing over $2.5 billion, with a B, in advertising spend that's flowing through their platform. So it's very impressive. Corinne has worked on advertising technology for the last 10 years, helping brands, mostly in retail, some e-commerce, really to enhance their digital marketing strategy. So I believe she is an absolute perfect person to have on the show today to learn more about this sort of technology and how it could help your brand. So hi, Corinne. Welcome to E-Commerce Fastlane.
Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. I let it off a little bit at the beginning. Sometimes I don't like to put words in some of the executives' mouths about what exactly platform does to help commerce brands. So I'm going to kind of push it back to you and saying, hey, like what are you doing as far as the platform is concerned to help Shopify brands and store owners?
Sure. So Smartly.io essentially is looking to automate every step of social advertising. And in doing that, we want to help brands achieve greater performance and creativity. As some of the listeners may or may not know, paid social and the whole social ecosystem over the last decade really has evolved a lot. And it's become a significant channel, but it's also become a lot more robust. And there's a lot of different players, there's a lot of different partners, and a lot of them add value. But what tends to happen is your overall strategy on social can become a little bit disjointed, a little bit siloed. And what we look to do at Smartly is bring everything together. And so all within our platform, we're combining data and reporting, creative production, and ad buying all together to help today over 600 brands, including Third Love, Uber, Under Armour, to really scale their results on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and Snapchat in a unified, less siloed way. And we do work with some of the most advanced brands on paid social. So it's critical for our company to offer robust, dependable, and personalized support. And hopefully throughout our conversation today, I'll be able to highlight that a little bit.
I noticed too, for recording today, that I did just a quick look to see who is connected to your platform. Yeah, Third Love certainly is one Shopify Plus brand, but there's quite a few brands that have made the choice to use your platform. And I also see that there's quite a few agency partners who are, I don't want to say white labeling, but are certainly using the Smartly platform as part of their service offering. And I'm sure we'll dig into that near the end of the show because it's such an interesting opportunity. So if you're listening today, and you know that social advertising is an important part of your business, which it likely is, and depending on your maturity and kind of where you're at, there could be the agency model where people are using the Smartly platform to help execute the strategy, and then people in the mid-market to enterprise where they want to take the full reins of the platform themselves as more of an in-house opportunity, then getting direct access to the platform yourself as a brand is another opportunity. So we'll definitely dig into that in a few minutes. Before we get further down, I have a few different questions here because I'm really excited to share all of this opportunity. Let's talk about the origin story first, because I think it's so interesting, like why people build what they build. And it's so interesting because your technology is quite advanced and you're like one of the largest, you know, Facebook advertisers and, you know, and thought leaders in the space. So are you able to talk about like how this platform came to be, like the founders? I always think like what's the desire or the brain power or the expertise to even build this platform?
Long story short, I mean, our co-founders, Christo and Tuomo, are problem solvers. And nearly a decade ago, probably even a little bit more, they were looking to solve problems that existed in the market. And I think that's, you know, where most companies are born from. But they actually had started to build another product. And then they realized in evaluating their opportunity that there was an opportunity within paid social to kind of build out on the native platform's APIs. And so they pivoted their strategy and they started building on the Facebook API. And by the way, this is definitely oversimplifying it, but I think the rest is history. They started to accumulate customers. They're building out on the API. And one thing that I in particular love about Smartly is that we still operate under this mindset that they had all of those years ago, where they started to build something relatively simple enough to get a couple of customers under their belt. And then they had meetings with those customers to understand what their needs were and what their challenges were. And the direction they took with the platform was really what the customers were looking for and what problems they had in the market. And what I really love about Smartly is we still operate under that mindset. It's evident in all of our meetings. I mean, just a few weeks ago, I was meeting with a major e-com brand and a colleague of mine was presenting a demo of our platform. And as we were sharing something with them, they said a particular feature was great, but it would help them and resolve an internal challenge if it was a little bit more flexible. Our development team was able to build that for them within 3 days. And so I think just being nimble and listening to our customers and not building what we think the market needs and wants, but what they actually need and want has been critical. Paid social as a channel moves quickly. And so we have to move quickly too if we want to innovate and add value for brands. It certainly wasn't always easy, I'm sure, for our founders. I know there's a story that I've heard them tell a couple of times where they pitched a massive gaming brand in probably their first year with the product and lost. And then we won the customer a few years later. So it really speaks to how quickly and how well the product has developed over the course of the company's lifespan.
Yeah, I love it. I love the nimble idea. Even having a public roadmap too, sometimes is interesting when you're talking to customers and saying, you know, like, I wish I could have this, and escalating it up to the top as far as getting it implemented. I think that's very notable and just shows, you know, who's paying the bills here. It's your customers that are paying the bills, and they're looking for, you know, certain performance coming out of access to the platform. So it's nice to see that's, I'm sure that's the same kind of mindset that Shopify works on too. We have a merchant frustrations tool. There's certain things that are not quite right. If it turns out that it's crowdsourced being a significant problem that needs to be addressed, then it's addressed. It's crowdfunded or crowdsourced, so to speak, a tool that allows us to identify what sort of weaknesses are out there. What are the next projects and things that we might need to work on? So that's pretty cool. So let's talk about the pandemic. Obviously, it's a significant topic, you know, all through 2020. I mean, they said what in the first 3 or 4 months, 10 years worth of commerce kind of got escalated up. You know, we're kind of the 2030 levels today, you know, and because of that, a lot of brands had to be resilient. Some stuck their head in the sand and just kind of hopefully they're waiting it out. That's turned out to be not a great business tactic. But the resilient ones are the ones that have thought about, well, how can we own the customer journey? How can we own the direct-to-consumer side of it? How can we maybe make it a little more friendlier as far as in person, you know, buy online, pick up in store, just overall better digital shopping. So I'm curious, from just because you do a lot of social advertising, you're driving traffic to e-commerce sites, which they could very well pick up in store, curbside, they can buy online, you can ship it directly. There's lots of opportunities out here. I'm just curious from how you believe things are going to evolve over the next little while from what you've seen.
It's a great question. And first and foremost, just want to acknowledge, you know, obviously 2020 was a really hard year for a lot of businesses and people. What gets most of us through is trying to find some of the silver lining. And from a professional stance, I think that 2020 was one of the most interesting years that I've seen, at least as far as consumer behavior goes. You know, brands across the retail, e-com, bunch of different industries really underwent a really rapid transition towards digital first. And many first-time shoppers were activated. And of course, it became kind of this rat race to figure out how you could engage with consumers in the most effective way. We birthed brand new acronyms as if the world needed more in 2020. So we've got BOPUS now, buy online, pick up in store. Initiatives like expedited shipping showed consumers how easy digital shopping is. And I think brands also realized at the same time that when you're making fast changes to how people shop your product, you have to figure out a way to communicate quickly with consumers. Going into 2021, I think we'll continue to see brands really beef up their e-commerce strategy. And as part of that, further adopt social advertising into their marketing mix, because digital shopping certainly isn't going anywhere. And I think one thing that can be helpful is just thinking about depending on your own personal habits, because we're all technically consumers. And of course, we're parts of different audiences, but it's easy to think about the shift and how broad it is when you start to think about you and your personal circles. I've always been a digital shopper, so for me, not much has changed. But when I think about people like my parents, they always did their grocery shopping in person. And in 2020, at one point, they did their grocery shopping online because they absolutely had to. But then once they saw how easy it is, they're actually now continuing to do their grocery shopping online. So there really was these huge lifestyle changes that won't just kind of live in 2020. They'll expand into 2021 and beyond. And I think what all brands and marketers should be thinking is, how can I really replicate the in-store shopping experience online to make it as good, if not better? If you're walking through a mall or grocery store and you see a sale sign or a certain deal that might compel you to walk in or to compel you to grab a product that you might not normally, how do you replicate that digitally? And through any digital advertising, but particularly with social advertising, where you can be especially fast and nimble in your messaging, it's important because that's how you kind of capture that new audience and you capture all of these users who suddenly are doing more of their overall shopping online because of 2020.
Yeah, totally with you on that. I know one thing I've learned too along the way with some of the feedback from the brands is that the attention span of a lot of people are smaller. And because of that, the whole idea is, well, how do we gain their attention, if their attention span is being reduced because there's more competitors or more people coming online, what sort of things can we do from that typically were available in the in-store experience? How do we get that online? That's when conversations about personalization start coming up and start leveraging either like the known customer or even the unknown customer. And then how do we offer something on the website that's compelling so that they actually feel like what they're seeing is what they're actually looking for. Like, I think it's really interesting. There's so much research going on right now. And I interviewed another partner in this whole sphere about personalization. And it's so interesting about the fact that what's happening in the industry right now is most on-site optimization. I know we're on a side pivot here, but, and I don't get on a soapbox too much, but it's so interesting that if we're trying to improve our on-site experience, the bulk of either themes or apps and things that are available in the Shopify ecosystem typically are tailoring to the known customer and what they believe likely should happen or has happened to the known customer. If they've clicked this, they've gone here, if they bought this, they likely bought this. And then, but you're making a lot of assumptions for the 10%. And what's interesting, and I think the larger challenge that a lot of people are working on, is how do we deal with the unknown customer and then being able to tailor the, you know, the on-site experience. So I'll throw a couple links into the show notes for this one about maybe furthering your discovery about, well, yeah, we know that we want to improve our customer experience overall, but we only have a 10% of the customers, we know who they are, and the other 90, we do not know who they are, and how do we tailor that experience to them? And so that's an interesting little topic. Let's talk about some of the social channels, because I think there's so many out there, and I think what I find with some of the brands I manage is that they tend to be dabbling in different social channels, trying to see which one sticks. And I question that methodology personally, almost like a general practitioner, just getting out there too wide and being more narrowly focused and being more of an expert at it. So just curious to see, like from your standpoint, what sort of channels have grown as far as social commerce is concerned?
Well, Facebook and Instagram are definitely the first two that come to mind. And I think, you know, most brands would probably say the same thing. And I can chat a little bit more about those. I think that Pinterest and Snap have definitely started to catch up to Facebook on that front. And I say started to catch up, not because they're behind in their technology or anything, strictly because they haven't been around as long. And I think that in the last year, we've seen Snap and Pinterest start to really beef up their lower funnel initiatives. So rolling out things like Pinterest shopping and for Snap dynamic product ads to really try to bring some of those lower funnel initiatives to their platforms to get people thinking about products and obviously to attract brands to actually advertise on their platforms. And so I think that with DPA, for example, dynamic product ads, I think that that initiative on Snap or Facebook and Pinterest shopping certainly resonates with brands because it's what performs and what resonates with audiences. I think that to your point earlier, when you think about how do you stand out when every brand is running a carousel ad that has their products in it with a white background, it really comes down to, and like I'll say this a lot today talking about creative and testing, it comes down to figuring out what's resonating with your audience. And even when you think about something like a carousel ad, you want to make it stand out because the templates or the placements all can tend to look very similar. And so you want to do something like, you know, overlay an image template on top where you can actually pull in a border. Maybe you can pull in the price, the product name. We find that when you pull those things into the actual product image within the carousel ad, that the engagement tends to be better with those units. And so on top of actually getting better performance, you're able to actually pull your brand DNA into those placements that otherwise would look like any other brand, but you're actually able to kind of maintain that brand DNA that you've worked so hard to build. So I think that that's really important. And then the other thing that I should call out, because I think it's really interesting, is, you know, Facebook for a long time has had this notion of creating a frictionless experience for users, and they want that frictionless experience to carry over to consumers. So basically, the less clicks it takes for a consumer to buy something, the easier the experience. I can't tell you how many times I've tried to purchase something online, got to the website, found that it wasn't optimized for mobile. Of course, I'm usually doing my shopping while I'm watching TV from my phone, and had to just kind of give up altogether because it was too complicated or too difficult a process. With Facebook, by allowing consumers to make purchases directly in-app, they're creating a great consumer experience and the consumers are responding well, not to mention it's appealing for brands because everyone's competing for share of wallet. And so the faster you can get a consumer engaged and converting, the better for everybody.
One thing I've noticed too, it's funny about the Pinterest thing because it seems to be a predominantly female-oriented platform, but I believe the male side is growing. And what's interesting to me is, you know, I learned about having private boards and things like that. And there's some, you can have public boards, but having private boards and saving things from an inspiration perspective, because I'm currently, a couple things where I'm saving images for as inspiration about, you know, like backyard kind of builds, just thinking about patios and just outdoor living spaces I thought was interesting. I'm going to have a whole separate private board for that. But also I'm thinking about building out my office and my studio and thinking about what does it mean to run a YouTube studio, like the lighting and the sound and there's all different things and the visuals that go along with having an in-home studio. And so I've been saving a lot of these things. And if I'm doing that, I thought it would be interesting if ads start showing up in my experience about sound dampening panels. And I've noticed a few things. So it's interesting that as you start searching and saving and interacting with different kind of social platforms, I find it interesting that I guess progressive brands, maybe even using the Smartly tool, but with dynamic ads, it's so interesting based on a user's experience with a certain particular social network. Even if they don't have an affinity towards a certain brand, brands can then jump into the mix, so to speak, because I'm saving and interacting with certain pieces of creative from within the platform.
Totally. And I think that's what, you know, especially for Pinterest, because to your point, it is more of a discovery/inspiration channel. People are going there because they're in market for something, whether they're in market for new furniture, they're in market for bridesmaids' dresses, anything that, you know, they want to kind of explore a little bit and just get some inspiration. And that means it's one of the best places to acquire new customers, because at that phase in their journey, they typically tend to not yet be loyal to a brand. And so it's a great opportunity to introduce your brand while they're in market. And then as far as actual strategies go, I think the creative itself is one of the most important parts. So of course, you want to get in front of these users while they're in market and kind of doing this exploration. But you also want to ensure that you're going to capture their attention. So it's not enough to just kind of put something in front of them while they're in market, because to your point that you made earlier, people's attention spans are so short these days. And so you want to put something in front of them that is not just going to be relevant, but that's going to capture their attention. And so the actual creative itself is important, because of course you're putting a product in front of them when they might be in market for it, but so are 10 of your competitors who have the same products.
What about the advertising and then the content creation now that goes along with that? Because you're suggesting more than just kind of plunking something down there. You want to have something creative, attention grabbing based on, you know, if it's Pinterest, for example, if you're using this as an example, it's like, how can you create something about, as boring as it may sound to a lot of people listening today, but sound dampening panels for a home office? I'm sure there's ways creatively of making advertisements to come up that could resonate based on the things that I've been interacting with and pictures and things that I've been saving. So I'm just curious about what this all means now for content creators and advertisers together, you know, to be able to get the exposure that they need.
It's really understanding, again, what resonates with your audience. And that doesn't mean that it has to, you know, for sound canceling panels, it doesn't have to be the most visual appealing piece of creative. But even just knowing what resonates with the audience as far as messaging, like, is the audience particularly receptive to discounts? Do they like seeing the pricing versus not seeing the pricing? And these are all things that, you know, we tend to sometimes make assumptions on, that yes, of course, everybody wants to see discounts in their ads, but that's not always the case. And so it's important to understand those things. And then from just a placement perspective on Facebook and Snap, stories tend to resonate well with users. I myself spend a fair amount of time in stories. And one thing that's important to keep in mind is making sure that the ad doesn't always stand out as an ad. I don't think that most people are overly repulsed by ads. I think that they've come to expect it in paid social. But at the same time, as they're scrolling through stories of their families and friends, it can be sometimes a little bit jarring to see something that so blatantly is an advertisement. And so, especially with stories, I mean, it really is a great placement. And we do see more and more brands testing ROI against in-feed ads and scaling stories as part of their larger strategy. But when it comes to stories, we also see that things like UGC, user-generated content, performs well because it doesn't stand out so much as an ad. It's a placement that kind of is built to blend in a little bit with where it is in the channel.
I've noticed that too. I've interviewed a few other app partners that deal with the UGC or I guess the influencer or creator economy and kind of what they're doing. And it appears to be very authentic versus fake if it's just an ad. I mean, you're following people for a reason. You know, if it's someone in a certain industry, I mean, there's the celebrity followers and that's fine. That's a whole separate situation. And people get to know the fact that, you know, if you're following someone who's on The Bachelor and it turns out that that's just what she does now, I have the story because my wife follows quite a few people maybe on the Bachelor franchise.
I was just going to say, you don't want to bring up the Bachelor because this could easily turn into a Bachelor podcast once you get started.
No doubt. But I mean, I think if you follow those people that are part of that Bachelor Nation, then, you know, you understand that this is how they earn a living, whatever it is that they're doing. And yes, they have brands pitching them on a lot of different things. But at the end of the day, I think what this pandemic has really done that's very unique, instead of these large budgets, these things that I've learned recently, instead of these large production video budgets and photo shoots and things that have happened, this just can't happen now because of the pandemic. And so people are really resonating with the kind of DIY kind of home shoot. It's okay for it to not be perfect, especially if it's UGC and the brand has the rights to it. There's great tools out there right now where you can interact with potential an influencer or, you know, or a brand ambassador of some sort and create some kind of relationship with them, a monetary one. It could be affiliate commissions. It could be product. There's lots of opportunities out there, but they create the content for you because that's what they do. That's what their goal is. And because they're so good at it, they have the lighting, they have the camera equipment, they have all the things, they have a persona that people like about them. So it could be Bachelor people and, you know, maybe promoting some kind of vitamins or whatever it is. But, you know, if they see value in it and it is authentic, no wonder the conversions go through the roof. If the brand gets to own those assets, once again, flipped back into smartly potentially as social ads.
Totally. And I think the other thing too is there's sometimes this notion from brands of like, oh, you know, we don't have a huge production budget. We don't have a ton of money to kind of put behind creating these video assets. And so stories is a challenging placement for us because it does tend to kind of lean more towards the video side of things. But with tools like Smartly, what you can do is you can take still images and assets that you have and kind of repurpose them and leverage our video tools to kind of convert them into something that is appropriate for a story's placement, and then, you know, adjust the formatting and sizing as needed through the tool. But it makes it easy to make sure that people that don't have necessarily the means to have this amazingly produced video can still create formats to actually run in those placements so that they're able to capitalize on the performance from stories.
So it's like repurposing some asset and repurpose it into more of an animated version and or with the right orientation.
Exactly.
The people that are listening to this show, there's quite a few different types of entrepreneurs. There's some agency partners are listening to. I'm sure inside Shopify, a lot of people are listening to this podcast. What's interesting is the diversity that happens with this show, and it's just typical being out in the wild. I'd love it to hear from you, since you deal with so many different brands. You said 600, you know, some brands, and probably access to so many others because they have friends and entrepreneurs hang out with other entrepreneurs. I'm sure you've heard lots of stories, even in the webinar circuit you're on, or even prior when you're doing the conference circuit and meeting a lot of people. So I'm just curious, from your vantage point, like, what sort of advice, since you sell a service that allows brands to do social advertising at scale, and let's think about the maturity levels. There's some early stage people, there's some mid-market people, there's some enterprise people listening today. Maybe in generalities, like, what sort of things do you think people should work on today if they want to grow, and then the enterprise people if they want to scale?
Sure. I think for all parties, social advertising is a great place to start. I mean, obviously just thinking about your marketing mix as a whole, but also rounding it out with social. And the nice thing about social too is that you can really invest into it whatever you have. And that's the great thing about this ecosystem that, you know, Facebook and Pinterest and Snap have created. You can go directly to their sites, regardless of your budget, even if it's on the smaller side, and buy ads on their platforms. Obviously, as you start to scale and you start to get into a more complex setup, that's when you might need a partner like Smartly to kind of help get you to that next phase of growth on paid social. But it's a great way to win new customers, and it will also just kind of help you scale and grow overall. The second thing that I would say is test everything and test often. think the fastest growing brands that we work with, regardless of size, are testing all the time. And to my point earlier, understanding really what messaging, images, et cetera, resonates with your prospective audience is really critical in finding incremental efficiency gains. And aside from that, to the point that you made, it's not always the same audience. And you might know what your current audience wants, but you don't know what your prospective audience wants. And so you need to kind of interact with those people and understand what's going to resonate so that you can better communicate with them. And consumers move extremely quickly. And so it's not always enough to just, you know, understand what resonated with them yesterday, but also what's going to resonate with them next month and next year. The other thing that we've seen a lot of brands do is lean on channels like paid social as a testing ground to really inform other parts of your marketing mix that might not give you readouts as quickly. So we often recommend, for example, if you have like a new concept, a new message, run it on social. You'll get response from consumers and prospective consumers really quickly. And then you'll be able to kind of leverage that across all of your other marketing initiatives that you might not be able to get such a quick turnaround time as far as performance goes. So testing the waters before you kind of go all in on it. And then the third thing that I would say is really just lean in on your creative strategy. Creative in paid social and just across the board now is critical. Brands need to be relevant in their ads and give consumers what they want to see and hear if they really want to stand out in the crowd. And we've seen over the last couple of years that, you know, especially as the user bases of all of these social platforms has grown, brands want to be there because they want to be where the users are. And so there's just been an influx of advertising on all of those channels, which is great. But at the same time, that means that there is a little bit more noise and the CPMs and competition are constantly going up. And so how you cut through that is really just testing creative and understanding within each of your audiences what's working, what's not. And again, you know, if your consumers are super influenced through incentives like coupons, discounts, promotions, continue to push that language. And you know, people move quickly, and the faster brands can test, the better off they'll be. And so I think, you know, that was kind of one of the biggest trends that we saw in 2020 was just the influx of testing. Because thinking back on this past year, brands were like, you know, do consumers want us to continue to address COVID? Are they sick of hearing about it and we should stop? Should we be informing them of what we're doing to stay safe? And making a guess on that can be risky, because if your consumers want to hear more about what you're doing to be safe during COVID and you're not giving that to them, then it might leave them with a bad taste in their mouth. And I think that is one trend that, you know, we kind of took away from COVID, but it certainly will continue to be relevant in 2021 and beyond when hopefully COVID starts to taper off, because it's always important to give your audience what they're looking for and make sure that you're communicating with them in a relevant way.
One thing I'll add to is post-purchase surveys I'm finding to be quite an interesting piece of technology that a lot of brands are using. There's some free to very affordable solutions that are available in the Shopify App Store. I'll put a couple links and stuff in the show notes. But what's interesting about a post-purchase survey, they usually ask a couple questions. How did you hear about us? And maybe a separate little, you know, like in a drop-down, a bunch of different things. It could be a podcast. It could be a Facebook ad. It could be a lot of different things. The great thing about asking the customer, they just bought from you, and we know that the customer journey is pretty fragmented, and it may not just be the attribution, doesn't always have to be last click. Well, Facebook is the last thing they saw, and they clicked on an ad, and they bought it in ad, or they got linked to the website, they made a purchase. Oh, so I guess it's Facebook's the big winner here. Well, is that really true? And the only way to really find out if, in fact, the attribution for a successful transaction is to ask your customers, and you'll get a large percentage, like more than 20%, will fill in because they're happy. They're on a high. They just made a purchase. And it's a very low friction way of asking them, hey, how'd you hear about us? Potentially a little and a blank, you know, anything else that you want to share today? And then you'd be surprised, and because I've gone through a lot of them, of the brands that I manage, and I'm just like, oh, wow, okay, there's some great intel in here. And you're right, it could validate the spend you're doing on social ads to saying, well, I'm spending all this money on these channels, and my customers are saying the same thing about where they believe, where they heard about us, or what they love or dislove, or what their, you know, new products they want to carry. You learn a lot of those things by asking them a couple of quick questions. So has that ever been on your radar at all?
Not from a Smartly lens, but I think it's really smart. I mean, again, I think that the more insight you can have from consumers' minds, the better off you'll be. And so whether that's looking into post-purchase survey data, whether that's you know, just looking at overall what people are engaging with, or whether that's running, you know, at Smartly, we run consumer surveys all the time just to kind of pick people's brains and understand outside of a brand lens, what are you hoping to see online? Because again, I always draw from my personal experiences, but I love seeing ads on paid social. I don't like browsing around on the internet like I do browsing in person. And Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, Snap, they know a lot about me from my browsing behaviors. And I enjoy that. I mean, for me, it means that if there's a product that I'm not aware of, but I should be, that I could potentially be interested in, that it's going to be brought to the forefront and I'm going to be, you know, aware of it. And I always joke around, you know, half of what's in my apartment came from a Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Snap ad, one of those. I tend to think back to that and just sometimes even when we're having these conversations, it's like, what would I want to see? Because again, we're all consumers. And so we fall into these different audiences in different buckets, but we're not talking about aliens here.
So what does the future look like for Smartly? Are you able to share any of the North Stars for, I guess we're in 21 right now, but you know, I'm interested about like partner alignment, more social channels, just innovation of the platform. Just like, how are you going to continue to offer value and assistance for Shopify brands through the Smartly platform?
Definitely. And I alluded to this earlier, but Smartly continues to develop its features and capabilities really together with our customers so that they can continue to benefit from our advances in our technology right away. 2020 for us was definitely a big year of expansion. We announced our partnership and finalized it with Pinterest. We announced our partnership, which is now well underway with Snap. So just continuing to build out a more robust ecosystem on paid social. We also announced new capabilities and services to our creative studio. So now, in addition to being the only partner that really brings together media buying and creative scaling, we can also provide support and supplement more on the creative front in the way kind of a traditional creative agency would, except I would say we're constantly trying to think of how we can divert from tradition and make things easier for brands. So one of those is knocking down the silos between creative and performance. And with our approach to creative studio and how we can supplement creative production, we're always thinking about it with a performance-driven mindset. For 2021, I think that the name of the game will definitely be creative, and that's probably not a surprise for anybody that's been listening. I've spent a fair amount of time talking about creative and creative testing, and you know, all of the brands that we talked to bring up personalization. And personalization is important because when we talk about how you engage with somebody, it's putting something really relevant in front of them. And people, you know, inherently tend to be sometimes a little bit selfish. And so when you're putting something in front of them that's personalized specifically for either their needs or their wants or what interests them, they're going to engage with it. The problem is that personalizing creative at scale can be really challenging and expensive. And so I think for us, continuing to lean on our dynamic creative optimization for paid social and seeing how we can support brands there will be huge. And then exploring, you know, where else brands might have some creative needs that we're not accommodating today, and trying to build those out. So I do think 2021 will continue to be the year of creative for us. And I think probably most people at Smartly would agree.
I understand you also had, I guess, a quite successful summit recently, and you called it the SOFA Summit, I believe. And I know it happened in late January, so certainly after today's recording. Will there be any links to any recordings or any kind of content that we might be able to share in the show notes?
Yeah, we'd be happy to share those out. We can include some links to some of the presentations that were given. It was honestly, a really, really, really great event. It's baffling to me because I struggle to coordinate events for five people. And meanwhile, our final numbers were north of 10,000 attendees and registrants. So it really was big. And we had amazing brands. I mean, all of our partners were there. We had Bombas, Third Love, Lego, HelloFresh. So a really great event that our marketing team just hosted extremely successfully, and we're happy to include those links. There's a lot of great learnings there, so highly recommend for anyone to listen in if you're interested in just learning more about you know, how you can scale up paid social and how some other brands are approaching it.
So we are nearing the end of the show for today, but you've just shared a lot, and I really appreciate it. I know everybody's time is valuable. Just, you know, it'd be great if you have any closing comments or any takeaways that you would like to leave with our listeners today.
The only thing that I'll say is I think overall 2020, because so much change and so much was different, it really forced people to think about how they handle the situation, whether it's how they tackle messaging to consumers or their supply chains and inventory. it was, in some instances, a response to just like, okay, how do we make sure that our business is continuing and that it's not going to completely come to a halt because of everything that's happening with the pandemic? But I think ultimately, these are questions that people finally asked themselves in 2020 that, quite frankly, should have been asked before 2020. And for today, at least, probably the best piece of advice I can provide is, what did you learn as a brand in 2020 that you can kind of take forward and carry into 2021 and beyond? Because all of these things that came out of 2020, thinking about how you message to consumers and thinking about how you can make the shopping journey easier for them, things like buy online, pick up in store, and curbside pickup, what's the next phase of that? How can we continue to make things easier for consumers? How can we continue to introduce new brands to them when they're in market for these things? And so thinking about it from that perspective, I think will be helpful in, again, kind of taking some of these lessons that we learned in 2020 and helping them to continue to amplify businesses and the consumer journey in 2021 and 2022 and hopefully every year forward.
And I have a similar sentiment from a lot of brands. A couple of things I'll add before we sign off for today. I find a lot of brands felt a little frustrated about their prior execution of putting all their eggs in the wholesale basket and then to retail. And then all of a sudden with the pandemic, I know this is, you know, a rare event happening for anybody that's still alive today. It's a rare event, but I had one brand in particular that like 80% of their revenue was going through wholesale. They didn't stick their head in the sand, but they said, Steve, we want to own the customer journey from now on. Like, we're okay now. Prior to that, because their business was so massive going to traditional retail, what they thought was okay for them, and then some residual effect of those that wanted to go direct to consumer when they had their full product catalog available on their direct to consumer site. But they have made a significant pivot. And so now their revenue is up massively now because they're completely owning the customer journey. They're focusing all their energies on the direct-to-consumer model. Fair enough, they're still going to sell wholesale. But the reality is that you really want to own the customer and have opt-ins for text messaging and push notifications and email, social ads, like getting people top of funnel, remarketing people. All that opportunity has to be there. And that's one of the big takeaways. The other thing that they mentioned too, which might resonate with a few folks today, is if you have a certain range or mix of product and there are other complementary products available in non-competitive verticals, like let's say, for example, you sell shoes, but you don't sell handbags or any other accessories and things, there's nothing wrong with aligning yourself with other complementary products. Shopify has a great integration through a few partners where literally you can have your range of product, but you can also create a partnership with another brand and selectively import certain SKUs into your store. And then when the transaction is created, the shoes and the handbag, you collect all the money, but then the handbag order shows up in the other person's admin, the fulfilling partner's admin. They fulfill the order on your behalf. We're used to this sort of thing. You buy on Amazon, you don't know if it's going to be an FBA order. You don't know if it's going with a third-party seller. We're okay with the fact that we have a multiple line items and we buy something. We're okay there's multiple packages coming. We know there's going to be different tracking numbers, and that's okay. So that's another piece of advice. Own the journey. Don't put all your eggs in the wholesale basket. Own the customer, the direct-to-consumer side, and think about the possibilities of aligning yourself with other people. Another idea, this happened recently too, water bottle company. They thought, well, you know what? We're selling a ton of these electronic water bottles. They have a little app, and the app tells you when it's time to drink some water, and the bottle glows, and it's really neat thing. But then they said, hey, wait a second. Do people only put water in their water bottles, or is there vitamin mixes or different types of things you can add to your water to enhance it? And the answer is yes. Well, let's not reinvent the wheel. Whose are the top major players out there that are selling water supplement direct-to-consumer type products? They found a couple, added to their website, revenue increased. It's really interesting what's out there and what's happening. And it's just, you know, being progressive and as you said, testing and being okay with the different types of ad groups and things. Well, I'm going to sign off for today. I know one thing that you wanted to share with people that got to the end of this episode today was Smartly is not for everyone. There's certainly a sweet spot of customer that can, number one, have the human capital to be able to execute with the power of the platform and what it can do. There's also some agency partners that use the same platform as part of their workflow. So maybe you can just let us know what sort of offer you'd like to give for those folks today that may want to give either an agency partner a warm intro or the platform if they're a right fit.
Yeah, certainly. And we're always happy to have the conversation with anybody. I mean, I think from our side, we've seen a lot of brands that have grown very quickly, and we're always happy to lend them any type of advice that we can. And for partners, to your point, that maybe don't meet the size requirements, then we can direct them to one of our agency partners that leverages our tools. But for them or for anyone else, we're always happy to do an account audit and just kind of go through, see what you're doing today, and make sure that you're set up for success on paid social. So happy to do that for any of you guys listening.
Well, once again, Corinne, thank you so much for coming on the show today, sharing your knowledge, your vision, certainly giving back to the Shopify ecosystem. I really appreciate it. I wish you like continued success, and looking forward to more case studies of some successful Shopify Plus brands executing with your platform.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was great.
All right, have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Today's episode was brought to you by LimeSpot, the leading personalization platform for high-growth brands on Shopify. LimeSpot increases your conversions and decreases your acquisition costs by using AI to understand your catalog and your consumers. The result is deeper engagement, higher average order value, increased revenue, and strong return on ad spend. You don't have to take my word for it. Trust the Shopify Plus certification. They have over 1,400 five-star reviews on the Shopify App Store and thousands of satisfied merchants. You can learn more about their incredible solution and get started today at limespot.com. Well, that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank you personally for being a loyal listener of E-commerce Fastlane. It's my hope that this podcast is offering you a ton of value through growth strategies, tactics, and exclusive insider tips on the best Shopify apps and marketing platforms, all with my personal goal to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company powered by Shopify. Thanks for investing some time today and listening to the show. I'm so proud and excited that you have a growth mindset and are a constant learner. I truly appreciate you and your entrepreneurial journey. Enjoy the rest of the week and keep thriving with Shopify.